Hello, and welcome to the Wild Heart Meditation Center podcast. We release these episodes every week on Wednesday mornings, and the best way to support us is by clicking subscribe and taking a moment to rate the podcast wherever you are listening. If you'd like to support our efforts to keep the nonprofit Meditation Center open in Nashville, you can donate via Venmo by sending your donation to @WildHeartNashville, or you can make a donation through our website, wildheartmeditationcenter.org, by clicking the Donate tab. Peace and love. Hope you enjoy.
So I think we'll jump into the topic this morning. We're going to be talking about the third factor of the Buddha's Eightfold Path, which is wise speech. It's a big area of our lives, and I actually prefer to talk about it in terms of communication. So not just speech, not just what we say, but all the various ways that we communicate. And how can we practice mindfulness around our communication? And why would we want to? So maybe we'll start by talking a little bit about why we would want to. This seemed to be a really important area of focus to the Buddha. He included it not only as its own path factor in the Eightfold Path, but he also re-included it in wise action, which is the fourth factor, and then he included it again in wise mindfulness. It's a part of the Satipatthana Sutta, is being mindful of our speech. And I think one of the reasons for why it's included so much in the Buddha's teachings is because it is so much of what we do. You know, if you just think about even yesterday, how many people did you talk to yesterday? Some of us may be kind of reclusive and isolative, so it might be one person or two. I thought about this earlier, and I spoke with my daughter, my wife, my sister's in town and staying with us. And I was like, I think that's it. But then I remember I spoke to a friend on the phone, and then I saw two of my neighbors when we were going for a walk. I was like, wow, just in this like really solitary day of rest, I spoke to six people. And then beyond that, not just the people you talked to yesterday, but like me and my friend on the phone, how much did you actively communicate on a device? Right? Like a text or a DM or FaceTime someone that you know, write an email. And now maybe include all of the communication that you did yesterday that you didn't actively do, but that was communicated to you, that you consumed, right? Things you read, things you saw, news, Netflix, whatever it may be, right? Part of what Thich Nhat Hanh calls practicing wise consumption, that what we take in also affects our thoughts and our feelings and our reactions to things. So being mindful of that. Now, we could even take this a step further and look at not just the things that are being communicated between us and the world, but also between us and ourselves, our inner dialogue, how we talk to ourselves in our head, right? In some ways, those are familiar with the heart practices like loving kindness meditation. It's in sometimes it's called practicing wise thought instead of wise intention. And what they mean is like literally trying to practice being more kind in your thoughts, right? So we're communicating all day long, whether it's internally or whether it's through what we're kind of consuming or whether it's direct or indirect communication. And I know for me, some of the most meaningful experiences I've had in my entire life have been things that were said. Yeah, there are stories that I tell and retell in here all the time about poignant moments in my life that came through communication. Like the time I was getting clean and from drug and alcohol addiction, and I had just gone out and smoked crack on Dickerson Pike in this horrible, tragic night, and went and talked to my sponsor at the time that I didn't really have a relationship with, and I poured my heart out to him about how awful and disgusting and horrible my night was. And he just kind of dismissed it and said, yeah, that sounds like it sucks, man. And then pissed off, I went next door and I talked to my friend that set me up with him. And I was like, man, this sponsor sucks. He just totally rejected me and shut me down. And then my friend said, did you ask him for help? And those, like, what, 3 or 4 words just sunk in at a deep level. It wasn't anything profound. It was just the thing that was said at the right time in the right place, right? Or the story that I tell over and over in here about my first teacher, Dave, normalizing the pain and the desperation I was in when I started coming to the meditation center, when he gave a talk on the Buddha's First Noble Truth. And he said something to the effect of, "Have you noticed how hard it is to be human?" Really simple words, but heard with the right ears at the right time, really validated the pain and suffering I was going through. Or we were in Florida recently driving to the zoo, and my daughter, I looked back and I said, "How's it going, sweetie?" And she said, "Oh, Papa, I'm so happy." And just filled with gratitude in that moment. Like, how often do I tell someone, "Oh, I'm just so happy right now"? And words really have the power to transform our lives. But I know also some of the most tragic things that have happened to me in my life have been things that were said to me, right? Anyone that's lived through grade school knows how hurtful words can be, right? I guess it's not true the sticks and, what is it? Sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me has not been my experience. Sometimes I would rather have sticks and stones than some of the things that have been said to me or about me. So communication is such a big area of our lives, and this is why I think the Buddha included it so much in his teachings. Also, Buddhist scholars have written about the poignancy of how the Buddha taught as a teacher, his ability to remain silent in really pivotal moments when asked really big questions about his teaching, right? His ability to sometimes say nothing at all and just hold a flower, right? His ability to be really skillful in navigating business and politics and kind of warring states and class oppression and all of these things that were going on during his time. And my hope for my relationship to my speech and communication is, because it's such a big area, it can feel overwhelming, but if I can just focus on one area or one place where there's a pattern of communication that I want to change, my experience has been that it can be completely transforming. And we'll talk about some examples of these later. So for today's talk, I want to dive into wise communication, some of the things that the Buddha taught on the topic, some ways to practice in our own lives with wise communication. But first, just for a moment, I want to step back and talk about how this sits in the overall scheme of our ultimate goal of freedom from suffering. So the Buddha teaches wise speech is a part of these basket of factors of the Eightfold Path, which are called the Sila factors. And Sila means something like the ethical factors: speech, action, and livelihood. Now, this is usually the area where, if you're coming to a Buddhist meditation center, you probably had run-ins with other religious traditions where the morality and conduct section wasn't very thrilling. And so our religion allergies might start swelling up a little bit around the ethical factors. It's like, okay, here are the rules, and here's where I'm told about the smite and the judgment and what's going to happen after I die and where I'm going to go if I don't say or do the right thing. But it's important to remember, and if you know me, if you've come and heard me talk before, you know this is really important for me too, is to communicate how much personal responsibility is a factor of the wisdom we're cultivating in the Buddhist path, which means that what if the only consequences we have from not acting in the quote-unquote right way is the directly proportional to the action itself and nothing else? there's still a lot of weight to that. You know, that what I say matters, that whatever patterns I have in my communication or the ways I act or engage with other people in the world, that there's this cause and effect relationship between what I do and my level of peace and happiness in my life. And there's no doubt, I think, for all of us, if we really look at Buddhist ethics in this way, as it folds into this law of cause and effect, that we can see that our level of inner peace that we experience goes hand in hand with our mindfulness around how we show up in an ethical way. I know even in the most simplest way, like if I act harmfully or dishonestly or manipulatively in my life, it's harder for me to go to sleep at night. It's harder for me to sit with myself. It's harder for me to have a healthy sense of self-esteem or feel good about the way I'm showing up. It affects everything else. From a Buddhist perspective, happiness is a collection of good habits. It's not a mind state, which is impermanent. It's not a temporary emotion or feeling. It's really the direct result of the environment we build in our own minds and in the world. Whatever we practice, we get better at. So if we practice showing up in an ethical way, our world is going to mirror that, and it's going to feel like a safer world, a world we can trust better, a world that we feel we can be vulnerable with. But if we surround ourselves in an environment that's full of deception and lying and dishonesty, or there's too much intoxication in our life and we're getting swept into reactive patterns over and over again, our world is going to feel very unsafe. And so we've got to, as Gandhi says, be the change we want to see in the world through our actions. And not just in the sense of the grander macro issues of the world, that is definitely a piece of it, but we're also just talking about our personal ethics, how we show up. It's that the ways we speak, the ways we act, and the ways we engage with money and our work and make a living are literally the nuts and bolts of the lives we live. That's so much of what we do. So if we only were to bring mindfulness to these three areas, a lot of transformation can take place and happen. So the problem arises when we're unaware or uninterested in examining our behavior, really. We're missing a fundamentally simple but powerful understanding of the causes and conditions that are leading to our unhappiness in our lives. I've heard it said early on in a 12-step program I'm a part of, through your inability to accept personal responsibility, you actually create your own problems. And not pleasant words for me to hear, but powerful words for me to hear. How much is my own happiness really tied to my degree of willingness to investigate my part in things? And let me be clear, this isn't about finding fault or assuming that we're always at fault or in the wrong, because it's too binary. It's right and wrong or good or bad. We're trying to break out of that kind of binary moral code that we're so enmeshed with in our society, and we're trying to go further than that. It's not assuming that you're wrong all the time, but it's about radically working to understand your part in things. Because I don't know about y'all, but even in instances in my life where I've virtually done nothing wrong, there have been a few of those, just a couple, but really, in situations where I'm like, yo, dude, I've done like nothing. If I'm being honest with myself, if I really am willing to be curious enough, there's at least something that happens in my own heart and mind in those situations that I can work to uncover and I can learn to meet with more compassion and wisdom. You know, whether there are destructive views or resentments that take root in my mind, or whether they reinforce my already negative view that the world is untrustworthy, that I've been trying to work on, and then this really shitty person had to go and do something shitty. But I have to really investigate. What is this mind doing? So I think it goes beyond even saying, like, what's my part? Because there's too much self in that. It's to not even take it personally and to say, yeah, the mind reacts. That's what it does. So how does this mind react to this situation? And is that something to follow or something to abandon? So the central principle behind all of these sila factors, because this is the territory I'm about to get into with speech, action, and livelihood, is the principle of not harming, but it's also the principle of the opposite end of that coin, which is harmony and peacefulness. It's not about right and wrong, it's about what promotes peace. So now as we get into wise speech, wise communication, one of the things I want to say up front here is that communication, as I'm talking about it here, is not about finding effective ways to communicate that make sure that we get our point across or make sure that our communication goes a certain way or to make sure that we get what we want out of communication. Like, I'm not teaching a sales workshop on how to communicate effectively. You know what I'm saying? This type of communication is about creating peace and harmony with our speech. And I think that's important because sometimes, you know, with pop psychology and the kind of like eclecticism, is that a word? Of all of the like meme lord language of spirituality and psychology and pop culture, it can kind of get confused, you know, and the Buddha's very clear, is like he's teaching wise speech for one particular purpose, which is how does it promote freedom and harmony and peace. So, like I said earlier, it's so much of what we do is communicate. There's not just all of the different people and all of the different mediums, but there are all of the different ways. There's the internal, how we talk to ourselves. There's the external, which includes nonverbal, our gestures, our facial expressions, whether we choose to stand close or far away from people, what we choose to wear in some ways is an expression. Our nonverbal actions, meaning we communicate things by what we do, too. You know, if someone's repeatedly late, you might get the impression that they don't really care about your time. You know, if someone says that they're going to do something and doesn't do it over and over again, you might get the impression that they're unreliable or can't really be trusted to show up. We communicate things verbally through speech, writing, email, text, NFTs. I mean, there's all sorts of new forms popping out of the ether, new ways to communicate, more communication. Someday it might be like we're communicating with different planets and, I don't know, different microbes, or I have no clue what's going to happen next. But so communication is everything. Right? So are you overwhelmed yet? It's like, all right, we've got to really practice in this area, and where do I start? And I think, again, what I want to say before I go into the Buddha's teachings on the matter is if we make one small change in our communication patterns, it's going to have a dramatic effect in our quality of well-being in our life. So as you listen for yourself, you know, through the Buddha's teachings I'm about to go through, maybe just be really curious about the things that resonate the most with you. And finding one is usually enough. And as we go through this, I'll tell you about the one that I've selected at a period in my life that helped me out quite a bit. So where do we start? I think a lot could be said about mindful listening. And I don't want to go into detail a whole lot, but I think you could really do a whole talk on just how important listening is in communication. I will say three areas that I try to notice in listening, because I am a therapist and I listen to people, or try to all day long, I think the first is attunement, which is a non-distracted presence with the other person. And really what I've seen firsthand is how much doesn't need to really be said to create a connection. You know, to create a lot of power of healing in relationships is just by having someone be there. You know, when like a good friend of you says, like, you know, let's say you're going through a hard time and they're like, oh, I just don't know how to help you or what to do or what to say. Or maybe you felt that way before. And oftentimes we hear and we know for ourselves that we just really want someone to be there. We don't really want them to say or do anything, just to know that they got our backs, you know? And how we do that is really not being distracted when we're with someone. And that's hard, y'all. Like, I fuck up this area all the time. You know, if anything, like, I'm grateful for mindfulness because I'll see when I'm distracted and have an opportunity to practice, like, putting down the phone. And the second thing with active listening is noticing the impact that what I'm hearing has in my own heart and mind. So just kind of noticing that as I hear someone share about what's happening or something that's going on with them, I have a sense of the effect that it has on me. Because I think that's a bridge to creating intimacy in our relationships and vulnerability in our relationships, is being able to see how what someone's saying is affecting us. And sometimes we even communicate it like, yeah, man, as you're talking to me about that, I just feel so much sadness. You know, I notice like just how heavy it feels in my body as you're talking about this right now. And that's a way for people to really feel heard, you know? So noticing the impact. Also, another reason to notice the impact is that we often misperceive. You know, someone's telling me something and I think they're saying something else. So listening for what my mind is telling me or what my body is telling me when I'm listening in is helpful to step out of kind of miscommunication breakdowns. And then the third is similarly to what I just said is understanding, right? Like asking questions is a good part of listening. You know, like very therapy 101 and kind of lame to break out, but really helpful is, so what I'm hearing you say is. But I think a lot of problems, maybe some wars could have been prevented out of, so what I'm hearing you say is. All right, so what did the Buddha say about our communication? These are just kind of a bunch of different accumulated teachings throughout the suttas that I'm going to share with y'all real briefly. The first is the factors that are underneath wise speech as an Eightfold Path factor. The Buddha says to practice abstaining from four things. He says to abstain from false speech, to abstain from divisive speech, to abstain from harmful speech, and to abstain from idle chatter. And remember that when the Buddha is encouraging us to practice around any of these ethical factors of his teaching, he's asking for more than just a simple moral label of right and wrong. He's asking us to go deeper and to see the cause and effect relationship between, for example, when I'm being dishonest and what happens in my relationships and what happens in my heart and mind. He's asking for more than just, I'm not living the Buddhist rules, I'm being a bad Buddhist. Right, he's asking for us to not really even be Buddhists, but to try to be Buddhas, people that realize awakening through practicing peaceful and skillful thoughts and speech. So abstaining from false speech means being honest, means telling the truth, something that I'll get into here in a moment because it's a big part of our teaching. Abstaining from divisive speech means not gossiping or not sowing division between people or beings. Abstaining from harmful speech means not sometimes adding fuel to an already moving fire. It sometimes means being kind, practicing grace and forgiveness. It often always means not being violent and not saying anything harsh. Abstaining from idle chatter is an interesting one. It means noticing how we sometimes just talk for talking's sake, and what happens if we just endlessly kind of fuel that. So we're going to break this down a little bit, and how I want to do that is to use, instead of the abstaining from, more of a simple practice that you can actually use. I use it all the time. And this comes from the Buddha himself. He says, before you should speak, one should pause and reflect. Is what I'm about to say true? Is what I'm about to say useful? Is what I'm about to say timely? And is what I'm about to say kind? And he says, only when it meets all four criteria should one speak. So I'm not going to get this right, but it's a really helpful area of practice. Why speaking what's true is important for promoting freedom and harmony? Well, truth means being honest. It is literally a reflection of the reality of things. And if we're trying to live in line with the reality of things, if ultimately wise view, the first factor of the Buddha's Eightfold Path, is about cultivating wisdom and clarity, one of the best vehicles we have in order to do that is honesty. Because it lives in our at least most accurate representation of what's real, speaking what's real into existence, it gets rid of confusion and delusion and ignorance that causes suffering. So being honest is really important. And sometimes being honest is, you know, telling the whole truth instead of a partial truth. I know for me, my family are very almost histrionic in some ways, very dramatic personalities in my family. And so we like to exaggerate. And people like that about my personality, and I like that about my family, but it also can cause some problems sometimes, you know, where it's like, for the sake of just having fun, we can exaggerate the importance of something or what someone said or how they said it. Sometimes we can also tell half-truths by only telling half and minimizing or omitting part of what is true. Truth also means, I think, being authentic. You know, sometimes it's like I say what I think you want me to say. In therapy world, I call this the performative self. And it's not that the performative self is bad or wrong. It's just that, like, in my intimate relationships, I don't want to be that version. You know, I don't want to be that version that tells you what I think you want to hear. I want to be that version that can be vulnerable. And so sometimes telling the truth is like, yeah, man, I feel like shit today. You know? Not, oh, I'm fine, or I'm great, or things are good. Sometimes it's just kind of bearing your soul a little bit. So before speaking, you know, sometimes I might reflect of like, you know, what does it mean to say what's true in this moment? How can I try to speak more than a partial truth, or to not leave out some of the important things that I need to say, or being intentionally vague, and I can try to be more direct or be more authentic with what I'm saying. Saying what is useful. This is an interesting thing. With all of the communication and all of the things that we could say, you know, usefulness can take on a lot of forms. But I think it's a good reflection. Is what I'm about to say, does it need to be said? Or do I need to say it? Sometimes we go on both ends of the spectrum. Like, we think that what we won't need to say is never useful. Maybe you're one of those people. Like, it doesn't really need to be said. It's nothing new. It's nothing interesting. It doesn't add anything. We kind of doubt ourselves, and we need to kind of actually bring more of ourselves into the room. If you're like me, you need to do the opposite, which is to just STFU sometimes, right? Just shut up. I'm talking to myself. And I can say that lovingly to myself these days, because it's like, dude, I'm neurotic, man. Like, I will just talk. Mikey will tell you. I will just talk and talk and talk. And so sometimes I'm like, you know what? Give space for someone else to talk and someone else to kind of to hear from them, you know, what's going on with them. Saying what's timely. You know, one example of this for me is I have a lot of friends that are in recovery that sometimes they end up getting high again, and sometimes they want to get clean again, or sometimes they don't. But there's kind of a difference in our relationship. You know, they were a sober person, I met them in recovery, and now they're getting high. And while they're currently intoxicated, is not the right time to talk to them about possibly needing to be sober or how I feel about it, you know. So talking to someone when they're really emotional or really upset might not be the right time to, you know, address other things in your relationship. Or if you can sense that someone's not in a good mood, it might be a good idea to give them some space and time to cool down, you know. So being mindful, you know, of our timeliness. Also, like, sometimes I think of timeliness also as what's the right medium. Is this a text conversation or a phone conversation or an in-person conversation? I know for me, sometimes I think everything's an in-person conversation and then I never get around to it because it's like I'm busy, right? And so sometimes I need to let myself let it be a phone conversation. And then is what I'm saying kind? Kindness isn't the same thing as niceness. Kindness is being patient and sometimes being gentle and being able to say something in a way that's not mean or harsh. But sometimes it means like saying what we mean without being mean when we say it. You know, I think of niceness almost as this kind of southern thing of like just always being polite. You know, and kindness isn't necessarily politeness. It's just being non-harming. You know, it's like being saying things in a kind way and in a gentle way, but saying what we mean some of the times. Another thing that the Buddha offers for reflection around speech, actually, he doesn't use it for speech. He uses it as one of the precepts, but I like to use it around speech, which is not taking that which is not freely offered. So sometimes this goes hand in hand with divisive or gossiping, you know, or speech that sows division. You know, why does it feel so good to talk shit about other people? Right? Why does it feel so good to pry into other people's personal lives? If I'm being honest, it's because it makes my own humanity feel accepted better when other people are going through a hard time. You know, we can talk about other people and we compare ourselves to them. What is it, Shakespeare that says that jealousy mocks the meat that it feeds on? We make fun of or we ridicule or we kind of gossip sometimes, and it's like really our jealousy, the thing that we're longing for ourselves, our own insecurities. You know, sometimes we pry into other people's private information instead of letting them kind of offer that themselves. And as much as I don't like to admit it, I have found at times in my life that the areas I gossip the most are with the people that I love the most, about the people that I love the most. And what is this? What happens to trust in our relationships when I'm talking to one of my friends and I'm kind of talking shit about another friend? You know, what is the unspoken agreement that I'm saying and setting between us? It's that if you tell me something, I will tell others. If you trust me with something or if you're going through a hard time, I will talk about that with others. That nothing is safe with me. So I've really worked on this in my relationships with other people, is just trying to not really talk about other people in their character, at least. If it's something logistical, that's one thing. But about their character when they're not in the room. I've heard that Joseph Goldstein, Buddhist teacher, did this for a whole year. It was his practice to not talk about someone that's not present in the room with him for a whole year. And if he had to convey something logistically, he would. But if he was talking about what someone said or what someone did, or, you know, something that happened to someone in their personal lives, he just wouldn't say it. So the importance of clarity and directness. This is the piece that I took on for a period of time when I started really actively working on wise speech, is I tried to be more direct. I tried to learn how to say things in a more direct way. Like I said earlier, saying what we mean without being mean when we say it. And I had found that this was so underdeveloped in me. I was such a people pleaser that by the time I got to the point where I was trying to actually stop people pleasing and saying what I needed or what I meant, I would be kind of harsh. Because I had no practice and I would just be worried that the other person was going to get defensive. So I would go on the defense. And I'd be like, yeah, that's not going to work for me, buddy. I need you to do this. And other people would be like, damn, okay, cool. And over time, I learned in that kind of spectrum of balance between not ever saying what I needed and saying what I needed to the 10th degree, sometimes with some harshness to it, is I eventually learned to soften. And to realize that conversations around our needs are malleable, they're flexible. That sometimes I will say what I need and the other person will say, I cannot do that. And we'll have to learn how to continue a conversation from that point. Sometimes boundaries need to get established at that point. Sometimes I need to compromise my needs from that point. But I had never even gotten that far in so many of my relationships that all of that figuring out what a friendship really meant, what it meant to work through difficulty and talk about serious things and problems in our relationship, I had never gotten to know that dimension of things. So I really worked on this, and I found that a lot of gold was mined in having difficult conversations. Right, I learned to tolerate my own, literally just my body response. Because I used to get so fight and flighty going into like a conversation with a boss and saying, hey man, like I need more money. This isn't going to work for me. I feel more valuable than this. Or going to a friend and saying, hey, what you said to me the other day really hurt. And I know you were just joking, but I felt like I needed to share that with you because I don't want to get a resentment, and I want to talk about it. Socrates said, I have noticed that anyone who is to form a right judgment must have three qualities: understanding, goodwill, and a readiness to be perfectly frank. And one of the things I love, I got into like classical philosophy for a very short period, is when I read stories about Socrates, he loved to argue. But not in the way we think of arguing as like this divisive, negative thing. He liked to argue in service of the truth. And so he really would like hang in really uncomfortable conversations. He would admit when he was wrong. He would say, I read in Plato's Gorgias, I think it's called, he would say over and over again to the person he was arguing with, please, please, just stay in the conversation. And I promise if I realize that I'm wrong, I will admit it at once. And he just really wanted to have discourse and dialogue. And this brings me to the second or the next point, which is when it's safe, which we have to discern, being willing to have conversations with people that don't share our same views and values, I think is really helpful. You know, I think probably a lot of people in this room have some pretty progressive, liberal values. It would be probably safe to say that a lot of people, maybe not everybody, which is fine. But I don't know about y'all, but I was raised in the South, you know, and like not afforded the opportunity to just hang out with a whole city of people that felt and believed the same way I did about the world, you know? And so having to have those difficult conversations, I think has helped me to see the humanity in people still, even when I think their views are harmful or wrong. And again, within reason, I think that there are ways that we can subject ourselves to harmful views that cause direct harm, so we have to bring our awareness to this. But sometimes being able to have difficult conversations or not have those difficult conversations and accept that there seems to be this infinite distance that exists between us and someone else, but we can still live side by side with them, as Rilke says in one of his poems. So we've got to figure that out for ourselves, but I do think something about harmony and peacefulness and what promotes it means that we got to be willing to try to stay in the realm of relationship even when it's hard sometimes, and learn effective boundaries and learn ways to keep ourselves safe, but not just be around people that reinforce our own views and values. I learned this as a therapist. I'm anti the law that says that therapists can discriminate who they see in their therapy room. And so if I agree with that, then that means I've got to be willing to see people that I don't agree with. You know what I mean? Like, I've got to be willing to see people that, just as an example, I believe that the vaccine is a good thing. You may not. That's okay. I believe that COVID-19 is real. You may not. That's okay. It's not the way I see it. I could talk to you about why I don't see it that way. I'm happy to do that if you want to. But I've got to be willing to sometimes sit with people like that. Because my job is, I'm a fucking mental health provider, y'all. I'm a social worker. If we start saying who we're willing and not willing to be there for, you know, we start creating fundamentalism. That's the thing I'm against. So I'm big on this, you know, again, within reason. I think that there are certain people, you know, if you're historically marginalized or a vulnerable population, it may not be safe to go hang out, like, with a bunch of people that have a lot of ignorant, harmful views. So the last thing I'll say is, you know, some of the ways that we can practice around our communication. So just, it's kind of a recap of what we've said. Presence and listening, showing up for conversations. You know, sometimes even with those that we're closest to, like my wife is the person that I talk to the most, but sometimes the person I talk with the least, if you know what I mean? Like, because we're parents together. We because we share so many things in common, we end up talking about things and not really with each other about what's going on, you know? So presence and listening, and also with her, you know, like asking how she's doing and showing up for those conversations. Ways to work with this is to be present in our body, to pause, you know, to try to practice reflective listening. Again, as I said in the talk, you know, part of how to do this is also showing up with maybe some intention, like curiosity: is what I'm saying true? Is what I'm saying useful? Is what I'm saying timely? Is what I'm saying kind? Along with those parameters, we find things like, am I taking what's freely offered or am I prying? Am I speaking divisively? Am I saying what I need directly or passively? Am I saying what I mean without being mean when I say it? Am I willing to have difficult conversations? Am I sometimes, if it's safe, willing to hang in there with people that share different views? All of these things are ways to practice around communication.